Progressive Radio Network, the station for critical issues from critical minds.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yeah, we did. We started to burn too many things we found. This is Harvey Watson back for another hour at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Thanks to the crew in New York at PRN for hosting us and getting the word out again. We're going to talk more. We've had a show before, and we've had some discussion about the nuclear power plant situation in New York State, which has gotten ridiculously complicated. And we're going to segue later and talk about an explosion at a nuclear waste dump in New Mexico, which really casts an even darker shadow over the nuclear industry, and Diablo Canyon and other stuff having to do with nuke power and the march to Solartopia. We're joined by Manajo Green. Are you on with us?
I sure am, Harvey. Thank you.
Oh, great. Well, great to have you back. You are a terrific guest and an even better activist. And Tim Judson, from Nuclear Information Resource Service, may join us. Tim, are you there yet?
Hi, Harvey. I'm on the phone.
Oh, you are, Tim. All right, very good. And Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear. Are you with us, Kevin? Okay, so Kevin will be calling in. Some new developments. I was actually on the Tom Hartmann show yesterday on his radio show and then his TV show. We're just scratching our heads over this insane maneuver from Governor Andrew Cuomo and with the bailout of these four reactors in upstate New York. And since we last talked with you, Manajo, and Tim, about what's going on with the reactors in New York State, which is really, really critical to the situation nationwide and worldwide, a new sort of twist has come in, which I have to admit I can't figure out, between Exelon and Entergy. Manajo, can you give us a quick hit on what's going on here? And then, Tim, can you jump in?
Yeah, I can say that the Public Service Commission in New York just recently passed a clean energy standard, and the first two tiers of that clean energy standard support existing and future renewable energy. But the third tier is a subsidy to keep existing nuclear plants operating for the next 12 years that could cost somewhere between $8 and $10 billion that the ratepayers of New York will be paying for the next 12 years. And it was rushed through with very, very little public notice or public awareness. And I think it's, the false rationale behind this is to create a safety net to be sure we have time to transition to renewable energy. But that's putting somewhere between, as I said, $7.6 and $10 billion of New York ratepayers' money into subsidizing aging, failing nuclear facilities rather than directly into renewable energy and infrastructure and energy efficiency measures. And I know Tim can really enhance upon that.
Okay, thank you, Manajo Green. You're going to be with us, I believe, for the full hour. Tim, I know you have to jump off at the half hour, so explain away. Gotten really, really complicated. Entergy and Exelon, two of the McNuke chain operators are doing some kind of deal here, and I got to admit, I couldn't follow it. It looked like a poker game to me. Can you tell me what's going on here?
Sure, Harvey. Well, I think, you know, I mean, the details of what's happening are kind of complicated and convoluted, but the basic situation is that, the energy status quo is asserting itself at the moment when things are about to change. And, we have been monitoring the situation in New York for some time. I mean, I actually come from New York, so I, you know, have been in the trenches in New York State for 18 years. We noticed about, you know, 3.5 years ago that there was a potential for a lot of nuclear power plants in New York to start closing. There were Wall Street analyses coming out predicting that the Fitzpatrick and Ginna reactors in New York were among the most unprofitable nuclear plants in the country, that it would be better for shareholders if Entergy and Exelon, you know, started to phase out those reactors. And so we thought that we could expect Exelon and Entergy, given what bullies they are as energy corporations, to come in and start begging for subsidies to keep these plants from closing and to restore them to profitability. And given that this, you know, is a really a trend that's taking shape nationwide, not just in one state, really this was a precursor to what would be happening across the country. And, you know, I know you've reported on, what's happening in Illinois and Ohio and other places along the same lines. And, you know, we raised these issues with the New York governor's office, you know, starting 3 years ago, and were all but laughed out of the room that it would be absurd, you know, that there was no possibility that the state would subsidize these old reactors. They deregulated energy, you know, back in the late 90s with the idea that kind of thinking was impossible. And lo and behold, here we are 3 years later, and the same governor whose staff laughed us out of the office about this 3 years ago has now essentially rushed through probably the biggest single bailout of operating nuclear reactors in the country. And the reason that happened is all about politics and less about the environment and climate change, than it would appear on the surface. So, you know, what happened is that, as we predicted, in the last couple of years, Entergy and Exelon announced that the Fitzpatrick and Ginna reactors in New York could close because they're unprofitable, and they've been pursuing these subsidies. And the governor, who has been on the one hand advocating for years for the closure of the Indian Point nuclear power plant, you know, near New York City, seems to have determined that the closure of reactors, you know, potential loss of jobs in rural upstate communities, was a political threat to himself, and decided that it was going to be his raison d'etre in the last year to prevent those reactors from closing. And so, Entergy, who's been playing hardball with the governor for years to keep the Indian Point power plant from closing, took the same stance on Fitzpatrick, and basically told the governor in no uncertain terms that, you know, it was closing Fitzpatrick and there was nothing the state was going to do to change it. And so the state, you know, and these companies have been playing hardball for the last year, Exelon demanding subsidies to keep its reactors open, Entergy saying, you know, it wants subsidies for Indian Point and it wants to close Fitzpatrick, the governor saying, you know, hey, wait a minute, I want to close Indian Point and keep the rest of them going, to the point where the governor and Entergy and Exelon essentially cooked up a scheme where they would not only provide enormous subsidies to the four what they call the upstate reactors, which are all on the shore of Lake Ontario, as opposed to Indian Point, which is downstate near New York City on the Hudson River. In exchange for these subsidies, that they would broker a deal for Entergy to sell Fitzpatrick to Exelon, and this whole subsidy scheme that Mana just described that was approved a few weeks ago is essentially the whole thing. This 12-year commitment to subsidizing these four reactors is contingent on Entergy and Exelon reaching this deal to sell the Fitzpatrick reactor. What's happened in addition to that is the way that the PSC ended up setting up this subsidy is that it actually opens up the door for Indian Point to qualify for these subsidies within a couple of years as well. And if that goes forward, it could signal a complete sea change in the governor's position on the Indian Point power plant.
God, you know, I feel like I'm listening to Alice in Wonderland here. I mean, you got four reactors in upstate New York, two at Nine Mile Point, one at Genet, and one at Fitzpatrick. And then you have the two downstate at Indian Point. Are there any other reactors in New York State?
Well, there's six in total. Just to give the rundown, there's two reactors at Indian Point. There's the Genet reactor, which is located near Rochester, New York. And then there are the Fitzpatrick and Nine Mile Point 1 and 2 reactors. There's three of them all in Oswego County, closer to Syracuse, New York.
And those three are close together. Nine Mile Point 1 and 2 and Fitzpatrick. But they're not on the same. Nine Mile 1 and 2 are right next to each other, but Fitzpatrick is in a different site.
Well, Fitzpatrick and Nine Mile 1 and 2 are all next to each other.
Oh, they are. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a triple nuke, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this would, in effect, this deal between Entergy and Exelon would essentially, you know, merge them into one plant.
Well, why is this deal being done between these two faceless, anonymous, murderous corporations? What's the point of the deal?
Well, believe me, I mean, you know, it's a completely anomalous thing. I mean, Entergy has not only, you know, announced that they were closing Fitzpatrick, but they've actually taken all of the steps necessary to do it. I mean, Fitzpatrick's on deck to close in January of 2017. I mean, they've filed their notices with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the other relevant government agencies. They've withdrawn applications for operating license amendments at the NRC that they would need to keep the reactor going. They've actually been extending the operation of the plant for a few months to burn up all the fuel they can in the reactor, you know, knowing they were going to close it down. You know, they've not been doing maintenance on the plant. It's actually been having, you know, several equipment failures over the last few months, basically because Entergy isn't maintaining it. And so this whole deal is essentially an imperative by the governor to make sure none of these reactors close. And Exelon, in exchange for this $8 billion subsidy that it's going to get under the PSC, is basically saying, well, this is the dog of a reactor, but if the price of getting this $8 billion in subsidies is taking Fitzpatrick, then I guess we'll do it.
I mean, I'm almost speechless here. Did Andrew Cuomo drink some bad Kool-Aid? I mean, what? Kevin Camps, are you on with us, by the way?
Sorry?
Kevin, are you there? You are Kevin.
Oh, not Kevin. Man is here, not Kevin.
All right, so man, jump in on this. I mean, I am. I have to say, I've been doing this for more than 40 years, and this one is so far over the top that it almost defies description. Manager, do you want to chime in on this?
Yeah, there are two rationales. One is the pressure, as Tim mentioned, to maintain the jobs at the nuclear facilities in the western part of the state. There's been a lot of pressure to do that. But that's really a false argument in the sense that when nuclear reactors that are, you know, that have huge amounts of nuclear waste stored on the facility close, it takes manpower to manage that, and some of the jobs would be cut back, but you know, at least 50% of the jobs would be maintained, and it would be in a just transition there would be a plan to phase out, to maintain those workers that have critical knowledge and institutional memory, and to find the workers that are less essential to the safe operation of a facility or the safe closure of a facility, and and transition them to the new jobs that are going to be created as renewable energy infrastructure is brought on board. That's the ideal. But they're overlooking the fact that many of those jobs have to be maintained after the facility closes. So that's one fallacy. And the other argument is that we don't want to increase the combustion of fossil fuel in the face of greenhouse gases. And that is a fairly compelling argument in that what I'm finding is that the environmental community is somewhat divided. Tim and myself and Jessica Azoulay from Agree and others have been opposing the nuclear subsidy as unnecessary and also contradictory to the goals of New York's REV, Reforming the Energy Vision process that the Public Service Commission has convened over the past couple years, which is supposed to promote the shift from highly centralized facilities, fossil fuel plants and nuclear power plants, to decentralized renewable energy generation. They call that DER, distributed energy resources. And the other principle is that the free marketplace should work. A major subsidy of this magnitude is absolutely contradictory to the free market principles that the Public Service Commission claims to be operating under. And so it is absolutely mind-boggling. There is no good reason other than they're trying to buy time. There's a lot of political pressure, and the governor, as Tim explained, in collaboration with Entergy and Exelon, came up with a deal to subsidize the upstate nukes and now including Indian Point for the next 12 years at a rate that is just absolutely astounding. And it's money that is so misplaced, money that really needs to be put directly into rapidly putting renewable energy infrastructure in place as rapidly as possible. And that's something that the entire environmental community agrees with, is the need to transition to a renewable energy economy. But there are people that are concerned that they don't want to burn more fossil fuel on the way. And all the studies that we've looked at say that that is absolutely not necessary, that we can shut down the nukes, that we can phase out all of the nukes in New York and transition to renewable energy post-haste. And that's what we should have been doing. So,
let me mention that a minute ago. Let me mention two things. It's a terrific rundown there. We have had some other shows on what's happening at Diablo Canyon, and Tim, if you can jump in here. At Diablo Canyon, a deal was cut to two reactors in San Luis Obispo, California, in which PG&E, no angels in our book, conceded, A, that all the energy from Diablo Canyon could be, in fact, provided by renewable sources, and B, they came in and agreed with the union to a retain and retrain program where the transition for the unions, the workers from the reactors, and manager, you're 100% right in saying that, a good half of the workers at a closing nukes need to stay there. I mean, they're the ones that have the institutional memory. You know, it's like having an old car. You drive an old car long enough, you're the only one that knows how to run the thing. And here you got these workers that have been there for decades, and God forbid they should leave when this plant should shut down. I mean, at least half the workers should stay. Tim, how do we stop this? How do we stop this insane bailout from happening?
Well,
Well, I think, you know, in the case of New York, you know, the PSC decision's been made. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, we totally disagree with it. And, you know, but I think, you know, various parties and not just us, but there's a lot of people that are upset about this, everyone from, you know, groups representing energy consumers in the state to, you know, to other power companies. Are upset about it and are going to be looking at their legal options for, you know, for whether the whole thing can be overturned. But you know, the longer term approach in New York is, you know, is really going to be, you know, I mean, if the PSC decision stands and these subsidies go forward, they are, you know, ostensibly locked in for 12 years. You know, so there's, you know, it's going to take a lot of efforts to, you know, to disrupt and change that policy, you know, in order for it to get rolled back. Hopefully, you know, nothing catastrophic happens at these one of these reactors in the meantime. I mean, that's the other piece of this, is that these are all old, aging reactors, many of which, most of which are actually the same design as the reactors at Fukushima that blew up. And, you know, when they're already having equipment problems, you know, heaven help us if anything goes wrong on the, you know, with a reactor on the shores of Lake Ontario. But if it does, you know, it's going to be Governor Cuomo's nuclear meltdown.
Well, here's the question. I mean, okay, you said the PSC, the Public Service Commission of New York, has approved this bailout. What? But the money has, the checks haven't been written. And now we're hearing a dynamic between Exelon and Entergy. I think Exelon is, correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, but Exelon is looking for a guarantee that the money is going to be there. How do we disrupt this? How do we stop this from going forward between the PSC, and the writing of a check? Either one of you, tell me how.
Well, I mean, like I said, the only real way to stop it, in the immediate term, is for it to get thrown out in court. And you know, that, you know, we're not, you know, I mean, we're obviously going to be fighting that fight, but you know, there's always a chance that the courts are going to rule the other way on it.
Well,
I think in reality, if it does stand, you know, we're going to have to put all of our effort into making renewables and efficiency, you know, grow a lot faster, because the more that happens, I mean, what the New York PSC and the governor have essentially done is taken a vote of no confidence in renewables. You know, this entire proceeding is riddled, you know, with statements and studies by the PSC, essentially arguing that they don't think that renewables are going to be affordable enough, or that they're going to be able to be developed fast enough or reliably enough, in order to meet their emissions goals in the state. And, you know, we showed in the course of doing this proceeding that actually the opposite is true. I mean, if New York State did, you know, what other states are doing to develop renewables and energy efficiency, that the state could, you know, could well exceed its goals for reducing carbon emissions and growing renewable energy by 2030, it could exceed those goals without any nuclear power plants at all. And in fact, you know, the real tragedy of what the PSC has done, you know, aside from the fact of propping these nukes up, is that the cost of the nuclear subsidies between, you know, now and 2029 is going to be twice what the state is going to spend on incentives for renewable energy. And, you know, and just that basic fact, you know, shows you that that the state could get farther by investing in renewables and efficiency than by keeping these nukes going.
Mary Jo, do you want to comment on that? Well, here, let me ask you, Robert, who is suing? Who has taken the PSC to court? What kind of legal action is being taken to stop this?
Sure. Well, I mean, nothing's been filed yet. There's parties haven't, you know, until the end of the month to request the PSC reconsider its decision. And so everybody from Exelon itself to, you know, to groups like ours is asking for the PSC to reconsider, you know, parts of or all of their decision. We're obviously going to be asking them to repeal this nuclear subsidy. But then, you know, there's going to be lawsuits potentially at the state level, saying that, you know, basically saying that what the PSC has done was essentially illegal. And there's a lot of reasons to say that, you know, based on what Manna pointed out, which is that the whole way that they rushed this policy through without any adequate review is contrary to what the law requires. And then there's likely to be proceedings at the national level alleging that the basically what the PSC is doing is overstepping the state's authority in regulating power plants.
So until the end of the month, which is soon, people are making objections in front of the PSC.
Yeah.
And the PSC is out. So today is August 25th. So for the next 6 days, people can go in front of a PSC and beg them to reconsider. What is the time requirement for replying to these requests?
Sure. Well, the PSC will probably, issue a decision on on those motions by the end of September, and then if the PSC does open up parts of it for reconsideration, it could take another month or two beyond that. So it's going to happen during the fall, and it's because of some of that uncertainty that Exelon and Entergy are now in the last couple of days applying pressure to the state to guarantee that the decisions are going to get made, by early November, because where else they're going to start imposing penalties, or they're going to nix this Fitzpatrick, the exchange of the Fitzpatrick reactor, and that sort of stuff. It's more political screws that they're applying to the state to make sure that they get what they want.
So over the next few months, there's going to be jockeying within the state of New York, among the politicians, among the citizens groups. Be a lot of media back and forth, I assume. And then the PSC, depending on how much pressure is put on Cuomo, who's really stuck his neck out here. I mean, he is really an idiot to do this, as far as I'm concerned. So we can see demonstrations and speeches and all this stuff. And then the PSC will come out, and then the lawsuits will start. Is that right?
Well, they'll probably start the lawsuits that I mentioned will probably start before the PSC issues a final decision. There's going to be multiple things going on at the same time. But what I would also say, Harvey, is it's kind of taking this beyond the scope of New York right now, is that immediately after the PSC decision, Exelon was taking this proposal to other states. And Exelon, obviously is the biggest nuclear power company in the country. It's also not the only nuclear corporation that's in this boat of having unprofitable reactors that it wants subsidies for. And so the industry is really rallying to take this New York model and move it to other states. And so there's important things for people to be thinking about in terms of what's going to happen, say, in Pennsylvania, Connecticut, New Jersey, Illinois, Ohio, Michigan and other states like that, how this went down in New York isn't exactly an easy fit for other states. In Illinois, Exelon's been beating this drum for the last 3 years. Exelon's their home. I mean, Illinois is their home state. Exelon, feels like it's got its political base in Illinois. It figured it could get Illinois to give it subsidies just by asking. And the fact that the subsidies in Illinois have had to go through the legislature, where they've actually had to consider, the impact on the state budget and taxpayers and the economy of the state, that Exelon hasn't been able to get its way in Illinois and has had to announce the closure of a couple of plants, the Clinton and Quad Cities reactors, as a result of that. And, in New York, they got this through essentially because they had a governor who was willing to go to the mat and to do whatever it took, regardless of what anybody else in the state thought. And that isn't going to be such an easy sell in other states because this is a huge bailout. I mean, if the New York bailout is replicated in say Pennsylvania, it would be a $30 billion bailout, not just an $8 billion bailout. And the idea that other states are going to blithely go along and decide to make consumers bear the cost of what this is going to be isn't going to be such an easy sell. But I got to tell you that, you know, that if you know, another state or two go along with this, so we could end up seeing, you know, essentially, a domino effect, like what happened in the late 90s when all the stranded costs from building these very same reactors ended up getting bailed out by consumers from California to Maine to the tune of $100 billion. And so now here we are 20 years later with these same reactors. The industry's coming out for another $100 billion handout. And, you know, and so we've really got to, you know, people really have to start looking seriously at, you know, at what's going to happen in their states. And we've got to work together to make sure that this thing doesn't go beyond New York, even if it stands in New York.
Well, Chief Judson, you mentioned to me earlier that you have to jump off. If you do go ahead, I mean, this is devastating stuff. This is really the last battle, I think, for nuclear power. This is their final straw, their last gasp at grabbing, as you say, another $100 billion to keep these insane reactors operating. And, you know, what you said about Fitzpatrick, that they were in the process of shutting this thing and took actual physical steps towards shutting it down, which made it way more dangerous even than it had been before. That's just terrifying. And I have no comprehension of what Andrew Cuomo could be thinking.
Well, I think what I can say is the good news out of this, Harvey, because, I'm maybe a ridiculous optimist, is that, you know, what the evidence showed in this case at the New York PSC is that the argument for saving nuclear is completely bogus. I mean, those of us who actually, you know, looked at the issues, looked at the arguments that you needed to prop up nukes, you know, to prevent climate change, you know, found that, you know, that actually it was completely untrue. Just by energy efficiency alone, nuclear power plants in New York could be replaced by 2030 with no increase in emissions, and renewables could ramp up much faster than the state was even projecting. And in a certain sense, along with what happened in California and this decision to close Diablo Canyon and replace it with renewables and efficiency, you know, that's really, you know, that's really, you know, I mean, it's true now, right? I mean, nuclear reactors aren't unicorns. They're not magic machines that we can't do without. We actually, you know, the renewable energy future is here, and what we need to do is embrace it and move forward with it. And I think an interesting counterpoint to this was a study that was published this week by some researchers in Europe.
Yeah.
Who looked at the basic question of, you know, okay, well, you know, what happens to renewables and climate, you know, if you decide that nuclear power is your future. And what these researchers found was that the countries in Europe that are making a decision to reduce or phase out nuclear power, they're farther ahead on reducing carbon emissions and growing renewables than countries that are making the opposite decisions, to either keep it the same or to expand it. And what they said is that the reason for that, you know, seems to be that, you know, that the central question is whether, you know, countries or states are interested in keeping the energy status quo or whether they're willing to move in a new direction. And if you're willing to move in a new direction to address the climate crisis, and we're going to do what's necessary to meet the climate crisis, then what happens with nuclear power plants is irrelevant. Nuclear power, you know, if we're doing what we can to address climate change, then we can replace nuclear at the same time.
All right. Thank you very much, Tim Judson. I'm really glad to hear from you. I know you got to go, so we'll talk to you again. That's Tim Judson from the Nuclear Information Resource Service, talking to us about New York. Kevin Camps, you're with us now?
I'm sorry.
Yes, I am. I'm here.
Harvey, speak up.
Kevin is here, and Anna Joe. Thanks again, Tim Judson from Nuclear Information Resource Service. Anna Joe, do you want to jump in on that, and then we'll let Kevin give us a bigger, broader national picture? You want to talk to us a little more about New York? How do we, you as a long-time, I guess lifelong, New York activist, how do we stop this in the check from being written? Obviously, there's steps to be taken in front of the PSC. Oh, yeah, yeah. And then for the court.
Harvey, I think it's really important to You know, Tim mentioned the legal strategies, the either asking for reconsideration, which is going on, or Article 78, that, you know, the Public Service Commission has acted in a way that is arbitrary and capricious. I think there's a new terminology for that, but that's the basic concept. So that's one track. But the other thing is, the Public Service Commission decision has extended, unless it is successfully challenged, it will have extended the life of these aging and failing nuclear power plants for the next 12 years. My sense is that if we sit back and just let the process unfold, 12 years from now, we're still going to be grappling with the same questions. What I think was valuable about Diablo Canyon was the attention that it took and the fact that it brought all previously disparate voices together into a collaborative process where they set a goal of replacing Diablo Canyon, the energy that Diablo Canyon was generating within 9 years with 100% renewable energy and protected the workers' jobs, as you said, with either retention or retraining. And that is really landmark for the country. That's a wonderful model to follow, and I think that we need to engage in that process in New York. The problem in New York has been that because of deregulation, the Public Service Commission had no jurisdiction over these nuclear power plants. Only the NRC does in New York because they're generators, and under deregulation, the Public Service Commission can only regulate the utilities and the energy service companies, but not the generators. So that they had no jurisdiction and they have no plan. There is a New York State energy plan, but it relies heavily on burning of fossil fuel, but especially on natural gas, because the prices are low from fracked natural gas right now. That may not continue over the course of the next decade or several decades, but what they fail to acknowledge with natural gas is the fugitive methane releases, and that natural gas itself is not a cleaner form of energy than other fossil fuels. So it's a very faulty plan. So without a sound plan and without jurisdiction, they use this subsidy as a some sort of a safety net.
But so you're saying basically that the Public Service Commission cannot regulate the nuclear plants and guarantee their safety, but they can give them $8 billion.
That's exactly right. They have no jurisdiction to regulate, and then they use this huge burden on the ratepayers. And in the context of a Public Service Commission that has been actively protecting the utilities and claiming that the free marketplace must work. So the free marketplace must work, except when it doesn't, and then we'll ask the ratepayers to bail out failing nuclear facilities that are failing because wind and solar and hydroelectric and renewables ultimately are less costly. Once that infrastructure is in place, you don't have to pay for fossil fuel, and the maintenance cost, the O&M, is much, much lower. And then the other reason is fracked unnatural gas. So, you know, they really don't have either jurisdiction or a plan. And I think that what needs to happen in New York is those of us who understand the energy system and care about it need to create that plan and hand it to them, as they did in Diablo Canyon. And so that's another thing where, other than challenging the legality of this decision that is beyond anyone's understanding, other than they didn't know what else to do, so this is what they came up with. But I think that we need to create that plan and then hand it to them to implement, because I don't think we can trust them to do that. And my concern is that 12 years from now, we're still going to be trying to figure out what to do if we leave it to a public service commission that makes decisions like this.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Kevin Camps, are you with us?
Hello, Harvey. Can you hear me?
Hey, Kevin. Thank you so much for joining us. So you heard this. You're familiar with the insanity in New York. You know, I am speechless. I don't understand how Andrew Cuomo can look people in the eye. This is more than a stab in the back. This is like a nuclear weapon in the back that he's unleashed here. And I hope to God that the people of New York just unleash such a public fury that this is this goes down the tubes. Now, Kevin, you're at Beyond Nuclear and you work nationally. How does this ridiculous handout in New York fit into the national picture with nuclear power?
Yeah, and I caught Manajo just now, and I caught the tail end of what Tim was saying. You know, there's really no way to spin it positively. I know Tim tried to say, hey, we proved their arguments wrong, and that's certainly the case. You know, Mears and Agree and other groups like Clearwater in New York just really exposed the fallacies of the arguments. But the bad news that can't be escaped is that they got away with it, you know. And I guess we'll see. The fight does go on, as everybody's been saying, and there's legal challenges. And as you just hinted, Harvey, there could be huge political consequences. I mean, the governor's own father played an important role in the ultimate shutdown before it really even started to operate of the nuclear plant on Long Island, because
yeah,
there
sure.
was no evacuation plan at Shoreham. And so that's the case with these reactors. I mean, a phrase that we came up with at Davis Bessie in Ohio, which is a very dangerous old reactor that's also seeking a massive bailout, trying to use the precedent from New York, the phrase is radioactive Russian roulette. And what's really just outrageous and unacceptable is that the risks that we already knew about at places like Fitzpatrick and Davis Bessie, now the ratepayers are being asked to fund this ongoing game, if you can call it that, of radioactive Russian roulette. And the ironic timing of, you know, the deal, the dirty deal going down to the tune of, you know, the better part of $10 billion in New York. And then days later, the news surfacing that Fitzpatrick has been, oh, having a little leak of radioactivity for the past 4 years. And before that, it was an oil leak into Lake Ontario. And so just politically speaking, Governor Cuomo owns the situation. No matter what happens from now on, as you said, Harvey, that plant was going to shut down in January of 2017, and now it's not. So anything that goes wrong there is his responsibility. He's accountable for it and needs to be responsible for it.
As a politician and with Price Anderson, I mean, none of these guys and none of these corporations will ever be forced to pay the true consequences of a major nuclear disaster. And they all know that. They get to take the risk to reap whatever benefit they win from the throw of the dice. But if they lose, they don't lose. It's the public that loses. And, you know, this is just absolutely insane. Kevin, what do you think at Beyond Nuclear can be done to stop this deal in New York?
Yeah, that phrase from economics of moral hazard, well, this is radioactive moral hazard with the lives of millions of people. You know, Lake Ontario is the drinking water supply for 9 million people in the U.S. and Canada and a large number of Native American First Nations. What can be done is people just need to take a breath and dive in with all they have on these fights. We need a lot more help from allies, you know, and we do have folks who are waking up to what this means. I mean, the Tea Party in Florida in the last couple years has woken up to what these, you know, thefts of ratepayer money are all about, because down there it was for new reactors. Billions of dollars were spent on new reactors without the ground even being broken, without one shovel full of dirt being turned over. They somehow spent $3 billion on the levee nuclear power plant that doesn't exist. It's an empty field. And so even the Tea Party has now joined the likes of ARP and ratepayer protection groups and the environmental movement and the, you know, half-century-old anti-nuclear power movement saying this is just a crime and this has to stop. So, you know, there's many ways of doing that. And New York, as Tim was saying there, is unfortunately, it's a precedent now that places like Ohio at Davis-Bessey, they're seeking something like approaching $10 billion. It used to be $4 billion. Now they want $10 billion just for the nuke in Ohio. It used to also go towards coal. We have a bunch of fights ahead. Illinois is another ground zero on this fight. Exelon is going to come for a multi-billion-dollar bailout in Illinois. We just have to lick our wounds, learn the lessons from New York, put a stop to it in these other states, and hold Cuomo's feet to the fire for anything that goes wrong at this point.
Well, the one thing that's holding the bailout back in Ohio is the FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, came in and threw out their initial bailout. And since that time, the Sanus coal plant, which First Energy was trying to get bailout money for, has in fact shut. So, you know, that's a big deal.
That's the good news. The bad news is that First Energy Nuclear's lobbyists and lawyers are very busy. They changed the name. They tweaked the proposal. They're trying to get either the Ohio Public Service Commission, PUCO, Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, or the state legislature and the governor to simply get it done. And they're upping the amount of money, even though, as you said, the coal component has fallen by the wayside. Now it's all about the Davis-Bessey nuclear reactor. And something that's always astounded me about these bailouts is, yes, some of that money maybe will be spent on operations and maintenance, so maybe some repairs will be made, but there's really no requirement that that be the case. And at Davis-Bessey in Ohio, what's really frightening is they have a cracked shield building. It's an essential part of their radiological containment. If they were to get this $4 billion or $8 billion bailout from ratepayers, there's not only no requirement that the money be spent on repairing or replacing the shield building. It's actually impossible to do. I mean, you could replace the shield building, but it would be much cheaper probably to build an entirely new atomic reactor and containment than to do that. So the thing is, they don't plan on making repairs or replacements. We've seen that at other nuclear plants like Palisades in Michigan, owned by Entergy. They just pocket the money. It goes to their executives who are sometimes making $25 million a year in compensation. It goes back to their shareholders. That's where that money is going to go. It's just a wealth transfer from people to the 1%.
God, it's sick. We're talking with Kevin Kanz of Beyond Nuclear and Manager Green from the, what's the name of your group, Manager?
Hudson River Sloop Clearwater.
Okay, you're with the Clearwater, and so I am suggesting now that we have a national coordination here on the lawsuits. We have made some progress with some of these lawsuits. Clearly, the FERC has done a great service at Davis-Bessey, and these guys got to be taken to court. Manager, is there support in the New York legislature for this bailout?
Is there what in the New York legislature?
Does the New York Assembly, does the state legislature in New York support this bailout for these four reactors?
The legislature has been relatively silent. There may be a few exceptions. You know, part of the problem is that there's so much going on all at once. There are pipelines that people are fighting. Here in the Hudson Valley, there are 10 new proposed anchorages that would host large tankers and barges filled with crude oil to turn the beautiful Hudson River back into an industrial parking lot. So there's an awful lot going on, but I haven't heard much response from the legislature, and the media has really not covered. This is, as Tim said, one of the largest bailouts New York has ever offered any corporate entity, And there's been very, very little coverage and very little outrage. I'm afraid that too many people are, you know, just trusting that the government will take care of this. As long, all they care about is that when they turn the light switch, the lights come on. But here in the Hudson Valley, our utility bills have doubled because of a new capacity zone and lots of other reasons in the last year or so. And the people that are really going to be hurt the most are people of low income and also businesses that are small businesses generally that are on the edge. You know, a restaurant where they have to pay for cooling and refrigeration and when their bills start to double, that can be their demise. I wanted to also bring up one other thing, especially with Kevin on the phone, that is being overlooked. There are many things that are being overlooked and swept under the rug and not paid attention to. But perpetuating the nuclear reactors in New York for the next 12 years by this nuclear subsidy is also generating 12 more years of nuclear waste. In the case of Indian Point, that facility, the fuel pools, the leaking fuel pools at Indian Point are holding 4 to 5 times the number of fuel rods, highly radioactive waste that than was originally planned. And that is in part because there was never a national repository to move the stuff out. So they do move it out when they absolutely have to into dry cask storage. But what they've been doing is just adding more and more fuel rods and creating an overcrowded and increasingly dangerous situation. And that's going to be going on and over the next 12 years. And I thought Kevin might want to address that because a spontaneous fuel pool fire is very much of a possibility at any of these facilities. And that's what we saw in Fukushima. So I just wanted to see if Kevin might want to comment on that.
I just wanted to think, I want to jump in on that too also, Kevin. We did see spontaneous fuel pool fires. There's one thing, and we're running out of time here, and so if you can segue from that into this ridiculous notion that nuclear power helps fight global warming. In particular, I understand that Cuomo quoted James Hansen as saying that the so-called climate, you know, former climate expert, who must know nothing about climate or nuclear power at this point, quoted Hansen as favoring the continued operation of these reactors. And there's one thing that about global warming and nuclear power that completely irks me, one of many, but the fact that these reactors fuse so much hot water directly into the environment. You know, they're all talking about carbon-free, which they're not, but they never discuss the massive hot water and steam emissions that come from these plants that go into places like Lake Ontario and the Hudson River. So a dual question with less than 5 minutes left, Kevin. Can you talk about these two issues real quick?
Yeah, all tremendous points, Manajo and Harvey. I mean, you're right, Manajo. High-level radioactive waste is a curse on all future generations. That's if it goes well. I mean, all future generations from now out to the end of time, really. I mean, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency recognizes that irradiated nuclear fuel is hazardous and deadly for a million years. I mean, that's forever in human terms. It's more than that, actually, but they admit that. So we're going to have to contain this, isolate it from the environment forevermore. That's going to be a very difficult challenge. But what could happen, as Manajo mentioned, what almost happened at Fukushima Daiichi Unit 4 was a high-level radioactive waste storage pool fire. And that's the reason that Prime Minister Kan in Japan was secretly planning to evacuate up to 50 million people, 50 million people from northeastern Japan to get out of the way of the just unimaginable amounts of radioactivity that would have escaped from that pool, something like 10 times as much radioactivity as escaped at Chernobyl. And the thing about Indian Point, as Manigel mentioned, is there's a whole lot more high-level radioactive waste in the Indian Point pool than there was at Fukushima Daiichi Unit 4. So we are playing with fire in a big way. Now they want to make more of the stuff. They want to pack more of the stuff on site at these reactors on the Hudson, on the Lake Ontario shore. And those heat discharges, Harvey, water vapor, steam, is a global warming gas itself. It traps the sun's heat in the Earth's atmosphere and doesn't let it go. And you've also got the heat going into the surface waters, which are immense. I mean, we just saw Pilgrim on the Massachusetts coastline have to shut down yet again because the water's too warm over there in the summertime. So as climate change gets worse, nuclear power is going to be less reliable. It'll have to shut down because of the heat levels in the cooling water supplies. But even worse than that, it's going to become ever more dangerous. And one of the threats to these pools is extreme weather. You know, we've seen extreme weather hitting pools in the wintertime, like blizzards and such at Pilgrim. But there's going to be more and more hurricanes, and these coastal reactors are vulnerable. Tornadoes are a threat, and that extreme weather is coming because of the climate crisis. And one other thing I'll just mention quickly is the LA Times, a few days ago now, put out an article that the barrel burst at Waste Isolation Pilot Plant in New Mexico is probably going to cost as much to recover from. This was a single barrel of radioactive waste as the Three Mile Island 50% meltdown. About $2 billion recovery cost is what they're projecting.
And that's from a single barrel of radioactive waste. It's astounding. And, of course, the Carlsbad facility, the WIP project, was supposed to be state-of-the-art, way more money per curie of radiation than Yucca Mountain was going to be. As a military-based facility, it was supposed to be the one that would show the world how nuclear waste can be stored. And here a single barrel blows up, $2 billion worth of damage. The place really is unusable. And this is our future with nuclear waste. I'd like to see Kevin, by the way, and Manager, some hard numbers put out about the waste heat impact of nuclear waste. Thank you guys so much. Thanks for coming to New York. We'll be back again next week. Kevin Camps, Manager, let's shut.
Either way.
Thank you, Harvey.
We need it when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solar utopia?